later on.
Due to the vagaries of the Electoral College, a system that I greatly favor abolishing. But it is what it is. You have to work with what you have. And under the electoral system, my neighbors in Washington, D.C., and, you know, I often say it's the inside scoop from Washington. I do report from Washington, but I live in Northern Virginia. And that means I have the right to vote. The poor people in D.C., they do get three electoral votes for the president. They have no Senate, no representation in Congress, in the House, or the Congress. So they don't have the right to vote. And actually, if you look at it, and even in the electoral system, they have the least rights of perhaps anyone in the United States. Because, let's face it, the District of Columbia is strongly one-party based. It is solidly pro-democratic. In the 2004 election, John Kerry won 90% of the vote in the District of Columbia. George Bush didn't crack. So those poor people across the river from me, I mean, if they vote, the chances of their vote counting is infinitesimal. Because, let's face it, they... If Barack Obama loses the District of Columbia to John McCain, we are in some kind of crazy land crisis, or we have a bunch of incredibly corrupt voting machines, far more likely the latter. But that doesn't mean if you live in the district you shouldn't vote. I think there's a certain privilege, pride, and duty of every American to vote, whether or not your vote really has a likelihood of affecting the outcome or not. I am lucky enough to say that my vote actually counts more than most of yours across the country. Those of us in Virginia and Colorado and Ohio and Pennsylvania and Nevada and Florida and North Carolina and Indiana and Missouri and all those battleground states, heck, even North Dakota and Montana, Georgia, perhaps, Arizona, perhaps. Our votes just simply count more because of the vagaries of the electoral system. So I was out there, not only voting, I have voted, proud to say, of course, in Virginia today, but I was out there helping people vote. I've been doing it all day, and it's starting to rain now. In fact, it's been raining for about 4 hours, which makes things difficult, but I have a big umbrella. It's not too cold. And I got to say that the Obama team is out there and doing their best to help people in the rain. They are... you know, handing out coffee, umbrellas. We're doing our best to keep them warm, keep them happy. Anyone who's elderly or sick, we're putting at the front of the line. And thus far, I have seen no one leave the line. Now, to be fair, this morning when there was a long line, there was no rain. It was six. I got up at four something. Had 2 hours of sleep last night. I went in early before the polls opened at six to make sure that the voting machines that unfortunately we still have in my jurisdiction in Virginia, but to make sure they had run the tape, that it was a zero tape, I did check that, and to make sure they were calibrated and running and plugged in and all such things. They were, and I guess I have to trust the good graces of the people in the voting system, though I am well aware of the possibility of these kinds of things being hacked. If Obama loses today, there's no question in my mind, based on all the polls and everything else, it would only be through the dirtiest trick imaginable. But in any case, I went in, I checked, the voting machines were working, and I then went outside and spent my next several hours acting as a lawyer, protecting people's right to vote. And the laws in Virginia, like other states, are convoluted and crazy and messy, and I'll give you some examples throughout the hour of people who could vote and people who couldn't vote. I'll give you stories from the election trail, if you will. And I invite those of you to give me stories from the election trail, things you saw at the polls today, wherever you are, whatever state you're in, things you saw that you found interesting, laughable, sad, happy, crazy, wild. Did you have long lines? Did you have a long wait? We could share experiences. And then about 5:45 or so, I'm heading out early because I'm on a break, folks. I'm working all day today. And I'm talking about working at the polls. And I have got to be back there by 6 o'clock, I promise them, to be there for the last hour and indeed another hour or two because you must know the law, which is in every polling place in the United States. If you are in line when the polls close, you have the right to vote. The polls in Virginia close at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. If you're in the line at 6:59 and 30 seconds, you get to vote even if it takes till 11 p.m. to vote. And I will be there till the last voter votes, till the fat lady has sung, to check the voting machines, to make sure they count them accurately and report them accurately before I get to come home and join with y'all. In fact, there is a restriction on cell phones inside the polling place, so I'm not sure what time I'll be finished tonight to be able to join in with Bob and Joe and John and the rest of y'all. But I'm going to do my best to make at least some appearance later tonight, and I'll do that. Anyway, let me tell you what's happening in this swing state of Virginia. And again, encourage you to call in at 877-4-HEAD-ON and share your experiences, 877-443-2366. And then later on in the broadcast, and there should be some time, even in my truncated broadcast, I want to play for you an interview that just happened. I caught it right when I came home and flipped on the TV to find out what was going on and found a fascinating interview between Rick Sanchez and, oh, I know you're going to hate this, but I'm going to say it, Joe the Plumber. Yes, Joe the non-plumber plumber, Joe the non-rich wannabe rich man, Joe the I want to tax the poor to pay for the rich guy. But Rick Sanchez does something that most interviewers don't. He asks him tough questions, making me both praise Sanchez and be envious of the fact that I'm not there doing it. So I got a little envy there, but I got to say, Sanchez did a pretty good job. And I want you to hear that, and we'll comment on that too. So we've got a lot to do in the next 45 minutes, but I do want to encourage you to call in to share your experiences. You know, voting is one of those few events that we Americans all share together that is not a tragedy. Virtually every event that we all remember, you know, everyone remembers where they were on September 11th, 2001. People of a certain age all remember where they were when John Kennedy was shot. I'm sure people remember, where they were on Pearl Harbor Day, those that are old enough to remember that. We tend to remember tragedies. Election Day is something different. It's an amazing event. It is both national and local. It is both individual and communal. I can't think of anything else that's like that. I mean, you are making up your individual mind, but you're doing it with hundreds of millions of your fellow citizens. You are going in the most local of places, the precinct right near your house, one that you could either walk to or drive a very short distance to participate in something that has nationwide, even worldwide implications. And when you sit back and you think about the magic of it, it is a wonderful thing. Now, I am fully aware, as Dave from California will tell you and others will tell you, that there is the potential for cheating. I'm also fully aware and proud to say that that potential is getting less and less with time as we have more and more voter verified ballots. They are trying to cheat other ways too. In Florida, for example, you have a corrupt Republican state government doing whatever they can to keep people from voting. I saw a woman on CNN just being reported, in fact. They wrote her name down wrong. They misspelled her name. She didn't misspell her name. Her voting form was correct. She knows how to spell her own name. But some body at the polling official, and I'm not saying they did this intentionally. I'm not saying they were out to get this young woman. I'm saying that mistakes happen when you deal with tens of millions of names. She was a new voter. She had never voted before. Maybe they couldn't read her handwriting, whatever it is. They misspelled her name. And because some hapless clerk misspelled this young American woman's name, she lost the right to vote. It's shocking, really. No one denies that she exists. No one denies that she's registered. No one denies that she's an American citizen. No one denies that she would have had the right to vote if the clerk had done the right thing. In fact, no one denies that she did nothing wrong. And yet she's thrown out. And it's not her fault. And you know what? It's not even the clerk's fault. Sure, the clerk should have been more careful, but I know if you're writing down millions of names, you're going to get some wrong. It's the fault of a corrupt Republican regime in Florida that is doing every single thing it can to keep Floridians from voting. Because they know that Florida is a purple state, one that can turn blue as when it voted for Al Gore in 2000, and one that can turn red as when it voted for Bush in 2004. And they know that only by careful gerrymander, only by careful drawing of district lines, only by making sure that eligible voters are kept out of the voting places can they maintain the tyranny that is the government of Florida. Indeed, the Florida legislature tried to make early voting lines as long as possible. They ended voting at early areas at 3 p.m. They even, as you may know, restricted early voting to very, very few locations to make sure that the average early voting in time in Florida was about 5 hours long. Finally, people like me were mentioning it on the air. And telling the people, you know who caused this? Your Republican legislature. Vote the bums out. Wait the 5 hours and then vote the bums out. And finally, even the Republican governor, Charlie Crist, was forced to extend the voting hours. But they're doing it in Florida. They're doing it in Colorado. They're doing it in Pennsylvania. Why can't they just let people vote? In Virginia, there are not enough machines in minority areas and in high college students areas. My area is okay. So the election officials asked the Republican Attorney General of Virginia, who himself won his victory by a mere 353 votes, showing you how important elections are, to allow them to have more voting machines. He said, no, we want the long lines. So here I am, it's election day. It's raining outside. And people, the old, the young, the firm, the infirm, the strong and the weak, are standing under a downpour. It's happening as we speak, which is why I got to get out there for the late after work rush, and I'm going to be leaving here at 5:45, because I'm going to beg anyone who tries to leave that line to please stay. I'll offer to put them ahead of others. I will do anything to make sure the voters don't leave that line. I'll fight as if my life depends on it, because you know what? It does. This morning was better. This morning we had a pretty good turnout in the morning. We had people stand in line for about an hour, maybe an hour and 15 in some cases, which is not terrible. It was, in the 50s. It was not raining. People were willing to stand outside. Everyone was in a pretty good mood. It was fairly crowded. And right now it's not that crowded. Now, I'm sure when I left, which is about 4-something, it's not that crowded. I'm sure it's getting more crowded now with the after work group. There were some incidents which remind me how bad voting law is. There was a guy who came to the polls who lived in Alexandria, a town in Northern Virginia, and moved to Arlington, a bordering town in Northern Virginia. He didn't re-register. He was denied the right to vote. And the sad thing about this particular guy is I went through the various voting rules and maneuvers and laws, and I looked for a loophole, and you know what? In his case, there wasn't one. I told him he could vote provisionally, but his vote probably won't be counted. That's just sick. We need same-day voter registration. I'll tell you another story, a story of a couple that came in, and they left. And as you get used to doing this, and I hope some of you are doing this kind of voter protection across the country, you notice when people walk out and they're not very happy. Well, this husband and wife came out of the polling place pretty agitated, and we asked them if there was a problem, and they said yes, they were denied the right to vote. And we said, hey, you know what? That's our job, voter protection. We're going to help you vote. And the woman said, I thought you were Democrats. And I said, we are Democrats, but we're Americans first. We're going to help you vote. We're nonpartisan about helping people vote. So she looked at her husband. They shrugged their shoulders. We went in there. They fit within the rules. We helped the two of them cast a ballot. And we did so knowing that, you know, it would hurt our candidate, but we were Americans first. But I got news for you. The husband and wife came out of the ballot place and said to us, you were true to your word. You surprised us. You helped us vote, even knowing that we had told you we were Republicans and you were Democrats. So my husband and I talked it over while we were standing in line after you got us the right to vote. And we both decided to vote a straight Democratic ticket. These two McCain voters were denied the right to vote. We helped them vote, and they both voted for Obama in Virginia, a swing state. I told that to the people outside, and we let up a little cheer. What do you know? Doing the right thing was rewarded. Another story at another precinct I heard about, a woman came to vote, an elderly woman. She tried to vote, and they said she couldn't because, they said, she was dead. She left the polling place crying. We marched right back in with her and assured the polling officer that she wasn't dead, because she was alive. See? And she had her ID, and she was the right woman, and they had made a mistake. And I don't know what they do in Florida or Colorado when this happens, but this woman voted. And I know she voted for Obama. At least, so she told us. I believe her. What incidents happened to you? 877-4HEAD-ON. Tell us about your particular experiences on the polling, at the polling places today. 877-443-2366. Any of you work in the polls? I saw one poll in, I think it was Rasmussen, that said that 35% of all Democrats were working at the polls today. That's an astounding number. 35% of all Democrats were taking out off Election Day to either do what I'm doing, voter protection as lawyers, to do get-out-the-vote efforts, to make phone calls, to do last-minute canvassing, to do, as many Obama supporters were doing, going up and down the line, feeding voters, giving them coffee, giving them umbrellas, going inside, checking the voting list, driving people to the polls. It's a lot of work to be done. 35% of Democrats volunteered. And now, of course, these are the people that say they volunteered. Maybe only 30% showed up. What percentage of Republicans volunteered on Election Day? 5%. 5%. Is there an enthusiasm gap? There wasn't my polling place. I mean, you know, we do this every year in Virginia. We have elections on odd years. Last year, I was me alone. I was wandering around doing everything, get out the vote, voter protection. Not this year. This year we have so many people that I'm able to take this little break and talk to you right now. I'm excited. I'm excited about tonight. Election Day is a quasi-religious experience for me. It's my holy of holies. I get out the map. I just drew it before I went on the air. Trace the United States, put in all the electoral votes. I'm going to color them red and blue, as I've done since I was 10 years old, and wait up excitedly as each and every state comes in. I hope I get back here in time because, you know, I want to watch it as it comes in, but my first duty is to make sure the votes are counted, so I'm going to stay in the election place until they are. I will do my duty. But then I get to have fun. I'll stay up all night if I have to. It's a special night for me. It really is. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I want to play for you before I go at 545. an interview between Rick Sanchez and Joe the Plumber. I know this election is almost over, and that's good. I'm looking forward to never hearing of Joe Wurzelbacher ever again. The man is running for Congress. He's trying to use his 15 minutes of fame to parlay it into, I don't know, 15 years of our misery. But most anchors don't take him on because they say he's an ordinary citizen. And, you know, if you attack an ordinary citizen, people get mad. But he's not an ordinary citizen. He was an ordinary citizen back a few weeks ago. But he is milking his fame. And as such, Rick Sanchez is right. He's got to answer the tough questions. So Rick Sanchez took him at his word, asked him the tough questions. Listen to this interview.
Probably nobody in this campaign has been referred to more by his acronym or slash name than Joe the Plumber. His real name is Joe Wurzelbacher, and he's good enough to join us now to bring us up to date on what's going on with him. Joe, are you there?
Oh, hey, I'm doing real good. How about yourself today?
Good, good. Man, I got to tell you, just to be completely open about this, so many people have been writing to me today saying, why are you talking to this guy? Why are you talking to this guy? So here's your chance to answer a lot of the questions that I've been getting from a lot of them. And I'll start with just probably the most curious question that a lot of people have. Why would you be so upset about people who clear more than $250,000 a year having to pay taxes when you're nowhere near that category? Is that a fair question? Can you give me an answer?
I mean, you know, they're not going to like the answer because it's called principles, you know. I mean, that's what it comes down to me. I don't want someone else's money. You know, let me make my money. And, you know, what if you get the opportunity to make that kind of money? Then all of a sudden the government's going to take it from you? You know, I'm not riding on anybody else's back. I do on my own.
But you are not in a situation where you're going to be able to make that money anytime soon. You're nowhere near being able to buy a business that clears more than $250,000 a year because that would take millions and millions of dollars, right?
So it's okay to go out and rob a bank then? I don't understand the logic. That doesn't make any sense, brother. I mean, it's called principles.
Okay, so this is the logic of Joe the Plumber. We've heard it before. For him, progressive taxation is the same as robbing a bank. For him, asking the rich to pay their fair share is redistribution of wealth. It's socialism. All right? Now, this is something that, at first blush, Joe gets away with and has gotten away with for the last month. John McCain and Sarah Palin get away with it. But the obvious question to ask, the one that no one ever asked Joe the Plumber, is how are you going to pay for government? You want a war in Iraq? You want to kill a bunch of hapless Iraqis and take over a bunch of land for oil? Who's going to pay for it? The rich or the poor? Rick Sanchez has the cojones to ask Joe that very question.
I'm not trying to be, you know, disrespectful towards you. It's just principle. That money belongs to them. It doesn't belong to me. I didn't work for it.
No, no disrespect taken. The point is that we do have a system in the United States where somebody has to pay for fixing the roads, for the infrastructure, for the police department, for the firefighters who come out, put out the fire in your house. So who, if not those who make a lot of money, should be paying those taxes?
Well, you know, you're getting only one part of that. What's the second part is you're forgetting, or the person that wants to know the answer to the question is, you know, the people who don't work or don't work very much and, you know, support those fine, you know, the establishments you're talking about as far as our roads and fire departments, police departments, aren't paying into it at all. And so.
Okay, you got that? He's not going to answer Rick Sanchez's question about who should pay for it. Instead, what he's saying is poor people get government benefits without paying anything. So I guess poor people should pay more, should pay things they don't even have, because we all live in America. We all live in the benefit of living in America. All right? He wants to rob the poor to pay for the rich. Rick Sanchez calls him on it.
Well, they're going to actually get more, or they're going to get money back from my hard work? That doesn't seem right. I mean, taxes are necessary.
So wait. Am I hearing you correct? Did you just say you want people who make less than $250,000 to be taxed more and people who make over $250,000 to be taxed less? You think it's a skew now and you want to fix it?
No, nowhere in what I just said did I say anything about people who make less than $250,000 should pay more. Didn't say that at all.
So you would...
Huh? What? Joe? Are you having a bit of a logic problem? Well, if the rich shouldn't pay more... Okay, bear with me here. I know you're just a plumber. Well, you're not really a plumber. I guess you're not good enough to be a plumber. But, okay, you just said the rich shouldn't pay more. Okay. So Rick Sanchez said, you want the poor to pay more. No, no, I don't want the poor to pay more. I don't want the rich to pay more. I don't want the poor to pay more. But we do need roads. I want the roads to build themselves. I want the workers that build the roads not to be paid. No, I don't think he'd say that either. I want them to magically appear. No, I don't think he'd say that. I want massive, massive debt. I love debt. I want to go into hock. I want to be owned by Saudi Arabia and China. I want to make sure our children pay three times the taxes they do today. Well, he doesn't say that either. But you see, Joe, you see, there are only three possibilities. Either the rich pay more for government, or the poor pay more for government, or the future children pay more for government. Somebody's got to pay for these roads and the war in Iraq and all those wonderful things you want. The corporate welfare to Exxon. Who's going to pay? Joe? And what's Joe's answer? Oh, not the rich. Not the poor. Not the children. Gotta go. Stop attacking me. Leave me alone. Yes. That is where the interview goes next.
Well, because you just said that they are not taxed. They don't pay their share. So, the money's got to come from somewhere, Joe, right?
Well, yeah, but does it have to, taking more from someone else that's worked, harder in their lifetime or gotten better breaks is not right. I mean, you can disagree with it, but the fact is right, wrong is wrong. I mean, it's not an opinion here. I mean, you don't take money away from someone who's worked more or had, better breaks to give to other people.
But just right is right. Wrong is wrong. Shut up. Don't question me. I'm always right. You can't take more from people just because they make more. That would be wrong. You can't take more from people just because they make less. You can't ever pay more taxes. I'm glad Rick Sanchez pushes him. Hard. I don't care that he's a symbol of macho middle-classdom. He's incoherent. Listen to more in the interview.
But under this system, you're the one who's going to benefit. Look, I looked it up on CNN.com/money. The average plumber makes $37,000 a year. So I don't know how much you make, but
I may make more than that, but I'm not in the six figures. I work damn hard for my money.
Well, it's
I'm not in the six figures. He doesn't make $100,000. I work damn hard for my money. Okay, Joe. I want you to, not to sit back. I want you to listen to me. I want you to hear me. Joe Wurzelbacher, the non-plumber, listen. Barack Obama will let you keep more of the money you make. I shall repeat, Joseph Wurzelbacher. Barack Obama will let you keep more of the money you make because you make under $100,000. So if you want to keep more of what you make, you want Obama. If you want to pay more taxes, then you want McCain, because McCain, by lowering the tax burden on the wealthy and recognizing that it's all going to be paid back somehow, will increase your taxes. Is that so hard to get through your bald head?
Just kind of hard to figure out. I mean, you don't have a license. You're not registered as a plumber. You owe back taxes of $1,200. A hospital is asking you, St. Charles Hospital, Mercy Hospital, is asking you for
$1,100. Hold on one second, brother. I got a question for you.
Go ahead.
Why are you vetting me out and you haven't done this with Obama? You're sitting here asking me all these insane questions. I asked a question of a elected public official.
Right.
How dare you ask me what I'm making when I say that I don't want to pay more taxes and Obama's plan is that I'll make money under his plan? How dare you use logic with me? You're not supposed to ask me questions. You're supposed to assume I'm a multimillionaire plumber, even though you and I both know it's a lie, because it's all about hypothetical thought experiment and principles. Principles, brother, principles. The same kind of principles that says that I will never pay my back taxes. The same kind of principles that says I will lie on national television, say I'm a plumber when I'm not, say I make $250,000 when I don't, say I'm going to buy the business when I'm not, when I can't afford it, and it's never been offered for me. Say I'm just in this for principle when really I'm a McCain hack that hopes to get my own congressional race out of it. Don't question me, brother. I'm just a lying citizen. Rick Sanchez, to his credit, gives it back.
And you're gonna
No, Joe. Hey, Joe, you've gone on the air and endorsed John McCain. You are no longer just Joe private person. You have thrust yourself into this campaign by holding news conferences, talking to reporters, and endorsing a candidate. You have to be asked the tough questions, my friend. That's the way it works in this country.
Well, you know, ask good questions. Why don't you ask what I'm going to do for, what I'm going to do now?
Well, the good questions.
Ask good questions. Ask what I'm going to do now. Promote my congressional campaign. No. Rick wants to know, since you got famous by promoting incoherence, if you can explain it.
The question is this. Why is a guy who's not even licensed as a plumber, is nowhere near making $250,000 a year to clear, asking why it is that people who make that kind of money could be taxed? It just...
All right, brother. I'll answer the question. I'll answer it. You
right.
know, I've answered it once. I'll answer it one more time. And you're not going to understand it again. It's called principles. Look it up. And
I answered it once. I answered it again. It's called principles. That's what I say when I don't have an answer. Look it up.
Then you'll figure it out, man.
And your principles say that somebody who makes a lot of money should not be taxed.
No, look up principles and read the definition. Get it right out of Webster's and you'll understand it maybe. It's talked about taking someone else's money and taxing them at a higher rate because they make more than you, they've worked harder than you. I mean, cry me a river, man.
Well, some people would argue that actually the way the system is right now, that those people over $250,000, in fact, that seems to be Obama's argument, aren't paying their fair share like they were perhaps in the 1960s, and that it's imbalanced. I suppose you would disagree with that?
What about flat tax? You know, would you be for that? Would that be fairer for you?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I've done stories on flat tax. I think it's a remarkable idea.
I'm all about a flat tax.
Oh!
Obama doesn't go there. He actually, if you look at the rest of my interview with that... as far as when he was in my yard,
but,
I asked him about a
but
flat
neither,
tax.
But neither does McCain, 40%. So why are you bringing that up?
Well, because you're bringing up stuff that's insignificant to the question that I asked. I mean, you want to talk about my license? I've come out on the record and said, yeah, I don't have a license.
All right.
Okay, you got me.
Joe, I'll tell you what. It's a good discussion. Some different perspectives that you've shared with our viewers, and I appreciate you taking time to talk to us today.
See you later.
All right, man. God bless.
Oh, okay. All right. The first thing Joe has said that at least, I mean, it's not just, it's principles, brother. It's principles. Don't question me. Don't ask me questions. I'm ordinary American. I can, no. It's all about a flat tax, which, of course, we've never had in this country ever since we had the income tax begin in the 19-teens. And, of course, McCain doesn't support it either. But, all right, it's a flat tax. It's a flat tax. Joe? Make everybody pay the same rate. If you make $100 million, you pay $50 million. If you make $10,000, you pay $5,000. And, you know, if you make $10,000, you starve. But we won't provide social welfare for you because you should starve. This is Sparta. This isn't America. This is a place where the poor and the weak die. We believe in that. Some would call it fascism. Others would simply call it Spartan. But how about a flat tax? What about a flat tax? Well, with a flat tax, Joe, you can't have corporate welfare for Exxon and Mobil the way that John McCain wants. With a flat tax, Joe, you can't have a mortgage interest deduction, which helps homeowners at the expense of renters. With a flat tax, Joe, you can't have Social Security, where the poor pay a much greater percentage, and the middle class, pay a greater percentage of their income than the rich. You know how it is. You make under $90,000, whatever it is, $84,000, and you pay a full 7.5%. But if you make $100 million, you pay 0.001%. That's called a regressive tax, Joe, and it's the reason why Barack Obama wants to lower Social Security taxes, because they are regressive. How you like that in your flat tax? Plus, what about wealth, Joe? Not just income, wealth. You going to be okay with taxing all that too? I doubt it. Most people like you who claim you don't want to tax working people who work so hard emphatically do exactly that. You're playing 1984 here. Most people in the Republican Party will tell you, oh, we don't want to tax people that work hard. And then they do. What's the highest tax rate we've got? Income tax. Right? Because they want to end the estate tax. But dividends? You don't work for dividends. Capital gains? You don't work for capital gains. You sit and you watch your stock increase. Interest in the bank? No. And estates? They don't want to tax that at all. They want you to be able to be a rich trust fund baby, earn millions by doing nothing, sitting on your derriere, and making millions of dollars because great-granddaddy apparently either had slaves or knew how to work the system or maybe even worked hard, but you didn't do nothing. And you're going to get all that money for free and all that interest, low rates and capital gains and all of that. And then your secretary, who has to work as a waitress at night on the side so that she can feed her family, she pays a higher tax rate than you. Doesn't sound like a flat tax, Joe. Doesn't sound like John McCain is supporting equality of tax. No. What you and John McCain want, let's just say it, you want to tax the poor to pay for the rich. You want to hurt the middle class so the rich can be richer. You want to hurt yourself, which is what Sanchez was trying to point out. You want to hurt yourself so that those who work less than you can have your money. Rob from the poor, pay for the rich. Reverse Robin Hood. No wonder you're incoherent. No wonder you keep asking Rick Sanchez not to attack you personally. That must be what logic seems when you're wrapped up in incoherence. It must seem like a personal attack. 877-4HEAD-ON, 877-443-2366. I've only got about 7 minutes left. Then I am doing my patriotic duty, one that nobody's paying me for. I'm going to head out into the Virginia rain, into the darkness, because with daylight saving time's over, it is already dark here, and help the voters standing in line make sure they have a right to vote, make sure they get in, make sure their ballot is cast, keep them warm as much as I can, keep them inside, help the elderly, the infirm, and do my best to keep anyone from leaving the line. Now, I consider this my patriotic duty, just like I consider paying taxes my patriotic duty. You know, serving in the military is not the only way to serve your country. Sometimes the simplest way to do it is just to vote, or to help other people vote, or to help fix a broken system, or to come on the radio and try to encourage others to help you fix a voting system. So I don't mean to end today on a down note. I meant to end today on an up note. Last night, I played on my show the music from Les Miserables. There's a wonderful video if you haven't seen it. Check it out on YouTube. It's under Les Misbarak, M-I-S-B-A-R-A-C-K. And if you like musicals like I am, and maybe my people are, you recognize the song One Day More. It's a good old revolutionary song, and they have a bunch of people in Barack Obama headquarters mouthing the words, lip-syncing. It's worth 3-4 minutes of your time. It's funny. It's also inspiring. You know, I do think back to revolutions, to the French Revolution. And in Les Miserables, of course, there's a post-French Revolution revolution. There were many revolutions in the 19th century of France because you had a society where even after the French Revolution, you had nobility, extremely rich people, and a great mass of poor people starving. And they wanted their opportunity too. They wanted a new beginning. They wanted not a handout, but a chance to succeed. They wanted what we would later call the American dream. And their revolution was crushed, and it was violent, and it was murderous, and it led to miserable people, thus being the title of Victor Hugo's famous novel. But we in America have a chance to do revolutions without war, revolutions without violence. Sometimes it harms us, as in 2000 when the Supreme Court did a coup d'etat and no one took to the streets because we all assumed our democratic institutions would take care of it. Sometimes, as in 2000, they don't. It's a colossal failure. Sometimes we just get outvoted, as in 88, when George Bush Sr. beat Dukakis fair and square. Sometimes when you have masses of Americans, millions of people working together, organizing at the smallest grassroots level, in every town, in every city, in every rural area, in every suburb, in every neighborhood in America, we all work together to promote change. We don't all agree, but we agree that what's going on is wrong. And we recognize in an imperfect man, Barack Obama, our last best hope for a change of direction. There is something exciting going on in America. Can you feel it? Can you hear the people sing? In an hour and 15 minutes, the first polls in Virginia close. I think the first polls nationwide close in less than an hour. In, I would guess, 6 hours from now, less than 6 hours from now, I hope, pray, we will know the new president of the United States. His name will be Barack Obama. The vice president-elect will be Joe Biden. I think we'll have 58 Senate seats, possibly 59, and yes, that includes Lieberman. Won't be quite 60, but we'll add 30 in the House. Maybe there'll be a runoff in Georgia. Maybe we'll have a chance to have a runoff for 60. I'm a little worried about Al Franken in Minnesota, honestly. He's a tough case. But we will have the best chance we've had in a generation, nay, in two generations, to change this country for good. The last time we had this kind of power, we had it briefly under Jimmy Carter. It didn't last. The Democratic Party was split. We were fighting amongst ourselves. There were still some Southern Democrats there. Really, the last time we had to promote this kind of change was in 1964 under Lyndon Johnson, when he signed the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and he said at that time he knew he was consigning the South to Republican rule for a generation. He knew the racists would win their day for a generation. Well, my fellow Americans, that generation is over. It has been 44 years since the Civil Rights Act of 1964, and now not only do African Americans vote, but a certain guy by the name of Barack, half white and half black, is poised to become the next president of the United States. It is a new beginning. It is a revolution. It is a transformation. I helped to make it happen. You helped to make it happen. We are all in this together. There is a time and place for optimism, my friends. Today is the last darkest moment before the sun breaks out. It won't be perfect, and he won't be perfect, and I'll complain about him, and you'll complain about him. But the difference between him and George W. Bush will be night and day. Have hope, America. Change is yet to come. And with that, I am going to head back out to the polls, stand in the rain for another hour or two, and work hard to make sure that everyone's vote gets counted. Bob Kincaid has graciously agreed to fill in the rest of my time. Bob,
and I'm here.
Thank you for doing that.
Oh, it's a pleasure.
I got
to go
back in the rain.
Well, yeah, and you know, I've got this mental vision of you, Mark, standing in the rain, whistling show tunes.
One day more. I can't sing, but yeah, you get the point. Yes.
Yeah, don't do that, Mandy Patinkin. Okay. You ain't.
Yeah. Okay. One day more, folks. One day more. All right, I'm gone. Take it away, Bob.
Go do God's work, Mark.
I will. I am.
All right. Go get them. Thanks. That, of course, our very own vote protecting crusader, Mark Levine, he of the Radio Inside Scoop, which this is, for the next 16 minutes. I, of course, am Bob Kincaid. My 3 hours are on their way again, about 16 minutes from now. And we'll look forward and look back a little bit in the next 3 hours, I do believe, as well as welcoming your comments, your phone calls, your thoughts, and just see where the evening takes us. Of course, Guy James will be joining in at some point. Mark will probably join in at some point. John Fox will be joining in. And you, anybody, because, you know, you think about what you're going to see on the networks or on the cable news channels. And what you're going to see is a bunch of high-paid gas bags. I don't care what channel it is. That's what you're going to see. But the people who have brought about the change that we hope is going to come, I ain't jinxing nothing. You know, I'm one of the. I grew up watching baseball with my dad, and I remember being a kid, and some pitcher would have, for instance, a no-hitter going, and there would be a cut shot to the dugout, and that pitcher would be sitting there all by himself. The whole team would be as far away from him as they could get. Dad would say, "You know why it's like that, son?" "No, Dad, that seems kind of rude." He said, "Nobody wants to jinx him. Nobody wants to mention the no-hitter. Listen, even good broadcasters won't mention it." So I'm disinclined. I know what my hopes are. I know what my dreams are. And one of my dreams is that someday I will remember to turn the ringer off before I open the microphone. So just 1 minute, please. Stand by. Okay, here we go. So let's see what's going on first call of the evening. Hey, welcome to the program.
Happy Election Day, Bob.
Happy Election Day, Kevin.
How you doing?
I'm all right. I'm on pins and needles and stuff, but I'm just hoping it's going to be the right thing.
Yeah, it's strange. Today, it's like, that's what people have been saying, greeting each other, Happy Election Day. It just seems like a lot is just going to wear off. And, you know, I don't look at Barack as being the second coming, but, you know, it's on the road to a lot of healing.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, I don't look at anybody as the second coming because of how I feel about the first one.
Mm-hmm.
Happy Election Day. Merry Christmas. If this goes down the way we hope it does, this is Christmas, the 4th of July, everybody's birthday, all rolled into one.
And, you know, I just think of things like on a personal level, because I know for me personally, I've been affected a lot by the past 8 years. And it's just like, I know, you know, there's been a rise of alcoholism, divorces, you name it.
Oh, abortions. You know, the right wing gets in such a tizzy about abortion. But you know what? It's gone up in the last 8 years because it's become harder and harder and harder for women in those most stunningly agonizing straits to come to a decision that makes it possible to keep the baby. Yeah, all of those things. The domestic violence is up. Everything that could possibly be wrong in the American family, in American society, has gone wrong. Or am I just the big old pessimist?
Oh, no, you're absolutely right. You know, and it comes to a point, like I said before, and like I said, you know, I had to get away.
Yeah.
I had to walk away from it. Because I've come across too many Joe the Plumbers.
Oh, I know, and I'm so glad that Mark played that, but what an idiot he is. Not Mark, but Sam Wurzelbacher.
Yeah.
I wonder if he'll, you know, this idea, can you believe that? This idea that he's going to run for Congress?
Oh, God.
I mean, does that just make you want to go and just bang your head against the door?
Oh, hey.
Yeah. So you got to figure he's planning on running against some Democrat. And, you know, that's part of the thing, Kevin. You got to know, it's worth remembering that, you know, not today and not yesterday, but some good while back, the Republican Party started thinking about what its strategy is going to be for 2010 in the off-year elections, trying to get the Congress back. Because it's all about whether it's voter suppression or dumbing up the election or controlling Congress. The goal of the Republican Party is never, ever, ever to do good for America. Its goal is to keep good from being done. I mean, at least I've come to a point that these people are the forces of darkness in our world. They really, really are. So, yeah. But so you've seen a lot. Has there been? I mean, did you go by any of the polling places where you are? Is there like a festive atmosphere?
Yeah, the lines are around the corner, and there's some little incompetences here and there. You know, like the poll workers aren't really all that educated, you know, in the job, but it's minor stuff in compare. And, you know, New York is a relatively safe state, so stuff like that is okay. You know, it's stuff like this happening in Florida, Virginia, that I'm more worried about.
And I think we have a right to be worried about them.
Yeah.
But I'm beginning to wonder if the numbers are going to be such that all the sleazy tricks can't overcome it. And that's the thing. A lot of this has to do with the determination of people. You know, if they're in line when the polls close, then it doesn't matter if they vote sometime tomorrow. Because they have a right to vote, and they must stick to it, because that's been part and parcel of this. I got a story out of Florida, a polling place that had 400 people in line before the doors opened. Of course, it was a largely ethnic community. They had one machine for everybody in the precinct.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, and that's the thing with Red State America. I just don't understand the mentality. Why would you want to suppress the vote? You know, because
their ideas are terrible.
And it's just a lot of mean self-hatred, a lot of vanity. And it's amazing. Oh, Sarah Palin is just like me. Joe DePlum is just like me. You know, and again, I don't want anyone like me running the country. I have my flaws, and I know my flaws.
Well, look, Kevin, part and parcel of voter suppression is, A, what I said, the Republican Party's ideas are toxic. They're no good for anybody who works for a living, and if you look at them for even a minute and a half, you realize that they stink. So they've got to offset that. You know, Mark said a few minutes ago, that in 1988, George H.W. Bush beat Michael Dukakis fair and square. Well, that's not quite entirely true.
No, that Bullwinkle or Rocky the Squirrel thing.
Willie Horton.
Horton. Oh, yeah.
So, you know, that ain't quite, no. And that was the rise of the filth that we've been, this cesspool, this fetid swamp that we've been walking through. You know, Lee Atwater and the George H.W. Bush campaign.
Yeah, it goes earlier than that with bringing things back to normal.
Yeah, or Nixon's Southern strategy, sure.
Yeah,
but that's one side of the big old slug counterfeit coin of Republican politics. The other, you got a little picture of off of the Howard Stern show in the last week. Did you happen to catch that one clip?
No, I didn't.
Okay, he sent one of his people down into Harlem. To ask questions that were deliberately misleading. In other words, I think what they were doing is they were asking people on the street in Harlem. They said, are you prouder of Barack Obama because of his pro-life stance or his support for the Iraq War? And these people would say, oh, both of them. And you're okay with his vice presidential running mate being Sarah Palin? Well, sure. And what that was supposed to do, and this goes back to Reconstruction days, okay? This really does. This one particular hateful little undercurrent that certain people cannot be trusted to wield the franchise. And in fact, it goes back further than that, Kevin, because when the framers of the Constitution first envisioned the elections, they didn't trust anybody to vote.
Oh, yeah.
That's why we've got an electoral college. Originally, the members of the Senate of the United States were chosen by the several state legislatures. The only direct electing was done for the House of Representatives, and that was only by white men who owned real property.
Yeah. And, you know, I come from a culture where that prevailed until, like, the mid-40s.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
you didn't own double-digit acreage. You weren't voting. That's why, like, in the West Indian community to this day, particularly in the Jamaican community, you know, owning real estate is all important to us.
And that's because that was the means of disenfranchisement in the past. Sure.
Yeah.
Well, so I don't know. That's why they try to suppress the vote, because one, they know that they're caught out for their for what they are, and two, the premise of what Howard Stern did was to make the argument that the only reason African Americans are voting for Barack Obama is because he is of African American extraction himself, which by extension is a way of saying not smart enough to look at the issues. And I find that to be one of the most vile crypto forms of racism. And it absolutely disgusts me, because, you see, I could do the same thing. Jay Leno does the same thing. When he does his man on the street business, you can go and ask, red state America, white people, all kinds of questions, and they'll look at you and you can ask them if M-U-L-Y is Muley and D-U-L-Y is Dooley, what does J-U-L-Y spell? And white cracker middle America will say, Julie. Because it's all part of the setup. But at the end, in the final analysis, these people don't like extraordinary, hardworking Americans voting, because when we do that, they don't have a chance.
But the thing is, and how it stands to defense, like maybe because I used to be a fan, I kind of stopped listening to him since 9/11 because I haven't really had, or since Bush took over, because I haven't really had much to laugh about. I don't think he has that mean streak as, like, Rush Limbaugh.
Oh, no. He doesn't. The world is one big goof for Howard Stern.
Yeah.
One big multi-million-dollar goof.
He hates Rush Limbaugh, and he hates the SEC. And
oh, he wouldn't pee on Don Imus if Don Imus was on fire.
Exactly. So, it's kind of, or Rush Limbaugh. He hates all those right-wingers. So I don't think it's, like, a meanness, but I do get what you're saying. To him, everything is a joke.
Yeah. And everybody has potential to be made light of.
Yeah.
So, exactly. Well, Kevin, I'll tell you what. I'm going to take a quick break here and get this show finished and get my show properly started. And I hope you'll stay with us through the evening until we've got a winner.
Yeah, I'm probably call you back in a couple hours. I'm going to start heading home now.
Okay. Kevin, you take care and travel safely.
Okay, you too, buddy.
All right.
Well, take care.
Yeah, all right.
Okay.
Bye now. Yeah, because I'm not traveling anywhere for the moment. So that closes this hour, Mark Levine's Radio Inside Scoop. Thank you very kindly for being here. And thank you, Mark. Like Mark always does, that was a little heroic effort. Listen, if you're on hold, I'll come to you as soon as we restart the next program. I'm sitting here quivering. Honest to God, I really am. This is one of those transcendent moments, isn't it? This is one of those moments where you'll remember where you were. Where were you when Bush-merica had the curtain rung down on it? Where were you when America started the attempt to get back on the right track? And I'm not trying to be America-centric in this, because, frankly, and this is not egotism, and this is certainly not nationalism, but when America screws up, we kind of screw up the world. And so when I say you'll remember where you were, that does not mean just in America. Because for such important reasons, the rest of the world can look at the United States if we get this man into the White House, if we stop the four-year slide into the filthy depths of fascism that John McCain would represent. Filthier, greater depths, I guess I should say. If we can do that, then everybody around the world knows that we all have a chance. So we'll start things up here in just a second. Thanks for tuning in to Mark Levine's Radio Inside Scoop.